Jesus, yes. How y'all doing today? All right, good. Well, that's not bad. That's okay. Just kind of thinking, man, we're 4 weeks into this King Jesus series, and I hope you're enjoying it as much as we have been being able to bring it to you. Over the last 4 weeks, we've seen how all of history points to Jesus as King, and that as the King who is here, we've looked at his birth and his baptism and the temptation in the wilderness that show him to be God in the flesh, the Son of God, the Messiah, the King of Kings. And today we're going to take a look at the King of Miracles, the miracles. Now, when I say miracles, I know some of y'all probably get all excited, all right? Like, how many of y'all need a miracle this morning, all right? You're thinking, man, I could use a miracle. Or how many of you believe in miracles? How many of y'all believe in miracles? Wow, that's pretty good. I raise my hand too. I know that I believe in miracles because 2 Octobers ago, the Chicago Cubs won the World Series after 108 years. Now, miracles, but the real miracle would be if you went home today, turned on your TV, and the Tampa Bay Buccaneers were playing in the playoffs. That would be a miracle. Some of y'all, I mean, just look around the room, and this morning's really, really kind of unique because it's a miracle that some of you are even here today. I mean, yes, you're even alive to be here today. Some of y'all be like, man, you don't even know my stories. But yeah, it's a miracle that you're here. But some of y'all went to Winter Jam last night over in Tampa. And yeah, first service, amazing. I mean, they're up till 1 o'clock in the morning coming in. Believe me, it is a miracle that they showed up here today. So praise the Lord for that. Some of y'all, you look around the room or look to the person next to you, and you're like, it is a miracle that you married me, honey. Yeah, it's true. Or it's a miracle that we have stayed married, honey. And some of y'all be like, man, if I ever get married, that would be a miracle. Yeah, we think about this word miracle, and we say, you know, when a baby is born, or, you know, we kind of throw that word around, that's truly a miracle. Something extraordinary happens. We think about, you know, if we're just able to get somewhere on time, when we look at the traffic in front of us, we think, man, if I get there on time, it's going to take a miracle. We think about how we get healed, or we want to be happy, we want to be healthy. We look at all those things, and we say, man, that would be a miracle when something amazing happens. It's like a miracle for that. And all of that may be somewhat true. A miracle is an extraordinary event. But when we talk about biblical miracles, divine intervention actually happens. A miracle is a supernatural sign. It's a wonder or a mighty deed performed by God for the purpose of affirming, authenticating his message or his messenger. You see, miracles are not doing what is impossible. Miracles are doing what is only possible by the power of God. Miracles. Now, the Bible's famous for recording these supernatural events. Jesus' miracles set him apart from any other person that has ever lived. He did things that only God could do. The signs and the wonders and the mighty deeds of Jesus affirmed and confirmed and proved that he was indeed the King of Kings. And during Jesus' life, the Bible records at least 35 miraculous signs that tell us exactly who Jesus is. God in the flesh, King Jesus. Now, if you look at your bulletin inserts this morning, I just encourage you to do that. There's some sermon notes in there. You can follow along. But on the back of those sermon notes, there is a list of those 35 miracles. This would be a great study for you this week to go back through and to kind of read through those miracles of Jesus. Go ahead and check those out. These miraculous signs, these things that you read about, Jesus did right from the very beginning of his ministry. Matthew chapter 4. Mark chapter 1, Luke chapter 4, John chapter 2, right at the beginning, all the way until after he had risen from the dead, Jesus was still doing these miracles. You just can't miss the miracles of the King. And these are eyewitness accounts. These 35 miracles, man, these signs, these wonders, they always met a specific person's need or they affirmed Christ's identity, his deity, or confirmed his authority as the Son of God. The Bible tells us that these miracles and even more actually happened and why they happened. I think the Apostle John says it best in the 20th chapter of his book, verses 30 and 31. John says this, Jesus performed many other signs in the presence of his disciples, his eyewitnesses, which are not recorded in this book. But these are written that you may believe that Jesus is the Messiah. They're written so that you may believe that he's the Son of God, the King of Kings, and that by believing, you may have life, life in his name. So today we're going to take a look at where these miracles all began. The first of Jesus' miraculous signs in John chapter 2 in your New Testament. So if you have your Bibles, go ahead and turn to John chapter 2. You can help your neighbors out. Maybe if they're having trouble finding it, there's some Bibles in the chair in front of you. John chapter 2. While you're doing that, a little bit of background. Jesus here is about 30 years old. Okay, he's been baptized, he's been tempted in the wilderness. He has actually recruited his first five disciples. He's recruited Peter, Andrew, John, Philip, and Nathaniel. And now for the last 9 months, Jesus has been living kind of off the radar screen, off the grid in his hometown of Nazareth. John chapter 2 picks up after Jesus has walked up to 8 miles from Nazareth to Galilee. To Cana in Galilee, this small village named Cana. And he travels to Cana to attend a wedding with his friends and his mother, Mary. So he goes. Now, you got to understand, a wedding in Jesus' day was a big deal, all right? Now, I know weddings are a big deal. Some of y'all planning weddings or just got out of a wedding. Weddings are a big deal today as well. In fact, last weekend, we just had another one here, John and Deborah Gideon. They were in first service. If you know them, congratulate them. It was a great, great wedding, a big event. But man, nothing compared to, and you know what? I just heard the statistic that the average American wedding costs $30,000. Now, I don't know where they live or what they're doing, or some of y'all be like, 30 grand, that's a drop in the bucket. You know, I know who I'm talking to here. But $30,000 for a wedding, they're a big deal. Totally different deal in New Testament times, in the time of Jesus. It was a big, big deal then. Especially in a town like Cana, where there were like 50 or 100 people that lived there. They would come from everywhere around the region to attend this big event. They would leave their hard life of work. They would look forward to this celebration, and they would spend the time with this couple that they probably watched grow up. They would celebrate with the family. It was a time when the groom would show that he could provide for his wife, and throwing a party of a lifetime was the way to do it. Servants would be hired. A master of the banquet to oversee everything, he would be hired. Food would be cooked, and of course, there would be lots of drink. And it would be tragic. It would be devastating. And I got some stories. I'm sure you do too. You've been to some weddings where things just didn't go exactly right. But in this day and age, it would be tragic, devastating, if something were to go wrong during this wedding. Something tragic, like, I don't know, running out of wine for the guests. So here we go. John chapter 2. We see this wedding and this woman, this water, this wine, these waiters, and wow, this first miraculous sign of Jesus. John chapter 2, you can watch it on the screen as you follow along in your Bibles.
On the third day, a wedding took place at Cana in Galilee. Jesus' mother was there, and Jesus and his disciples had also been invited to the wedding. When the wine was gone, Jesus' mother said to him, "They have no more wine." "Woman, why do you involve me?" Jesus replied. "My hour has not yet come." His mother said to the servants, "Do whatever he tells you." Nearby stood 6 stone water jars, the kind used by the Jews for ceremonial washing, each holding from 80 to 120 liters. Jesus said to the servants, "Fill the jars with water." So they filled them to the brim. Then he told them, "Now draw some out and take it to the master of the banquet." They did so. And the master of the banquet tasted the water that had been turned into wine. He did not realize where it had come from, though the servants who had drawn the water knew. Then he called the bridegroom aside and said, "Everyone brings out the choice wine first, and then the cheaper wine after the guests have had too much to drink. But you have saved the best till now." What Jesus did here in Cana of Galilee was the first of the signs through which he revealed his glory. And his disciples believed in him. After this, he went down to Capernaum with his mother and brothers and his disciples. There they stayed for a few days.
King Jesus is here, and as verse 11 says, what Jesus did here in Cana of Galilee was the first of the signs through which he revealed his glory, and his disciples believed in him. And I love how this first sign of Jesus not only revealed his glory as king, but also the kind of king that Jesus was, the king of the present, the king who is generous and humble, the king of creation and transformation and celebration. And every miracle from here on out that Jesus would do would show these same kind of things about him. And it's all right here in John chapter 2. Jesus is a king of the present, the king who is present. If you noticed, that miracle was done because Jesus was there. He was on site. He was in the moment, in the now. Look at verses 1 through 5. The third day, there was a wedding in Cana of Galilee. Yes, he was there in the now on the third day, there at that ceremony, at a special occasion. He went. He was invited. Who invites Jesus to a wedding? Me. Anybody else? He had to be known. He had to be liked. Why? Because Jesus loved people. I believe that's the reason he was there. He was in the mix. And there he was, having fun, celebrating the present time, in the moment, with his mom, with his disciples, with the lucky couple, with the family, with his people. And one of those people was his mother, Mary. And she brings Jesus this big problem. The problem was the wine was gone. And Jesus' mother says to him, "They have no more wine." Okay, this is devastating. This is really bad news. This is a big, big problem. Like, just imagine for a minute that you showed up here at CCW this morning, all right, and headed straight to the cafe, all right, and you went to the cafe, man, you haven't even had your coffee this morning, all right, and you get to the coffee, and you're like, "Oh, that's it. Where's the coffee?" And then you went to the next one. Yep. No more. That's it. No more coffee. And you went. That's actually water, because I'm not going to get in too much trouble up here. All right. But. And in the story, it was water. It's sputtering. There's no more coffee. And you're like, "Oh my gosh, what would you do?" You're like, "Excuse me, we've got a problem. I haven't had my coffee today. And apparently you're out of coffee. I need some coffee." And it'd be like, "Well, sorry, we're all out of coffee." That would be a problem for some of us, wouldn't it? Certainly would be a problem for me. I'd be having to send somebody down the street real quick on an errand, because obviously it needs to be taken care of. This is devastating news. We're not talking about water or coffee. We're talking about wine here. But Jesus is presented with this problem. The wedding. Man, the wedding would be ruined. For some of you, if you showed up and there was no coffee, your morning would be ruined. Some people don't function until you have that coffee. Now, in the wedding here, if you understand the groom, for this to happen, just the tragedy of it, the groom would actually be shamed. He would lose respect, maybe even a blessing from her family. And in Jewish culture, his family could actually be sued for this. This is a big deal. So Mary goes to her son Jesus with the problem. Okay, why does she go to Jesus? Because he's there. He's present. Who else would she go to? I mean, her husband, Joseph, at this time has passed away. And this is her oldest son, who, by the way, happens to be perfect. Okay? He is the smartest, most resourceful, compassionate man that she knows. If anyone could solve this problem, Jesus could. So she goes to him. Now, I don't know if Mary was asking for a miracle necessarily. And she sure didn't know what Jesus' answer was going to be when she presented him with this problem. But who would you go to if you were Mary? Let me ask you this. Who do you go to when you have a problem? When you have a crisis on your hands? When there's something that you can't figure out and you can't solve? Can I tell you this morning that Jesus is present? Jesus is present. And may I suggest to you going to him with whatever your problem is. Whatever it is you have a question about, and you may not know, like Mary that day, what he will say or what he will do. But bring it to Jesus. Bring it to him. He is there. He's present. We do that through prayer. Pray to him. Trust him. And accept whatever he decides to do. Now, what does Jesus do in this story? I mean, what does he say? I mean, I know we've seen the end of it. We know what he does. We've seen the end of the story. Jesus is present in the moment. He solves the problem. But Mary didn't know that. Mary didn't know if he would. In fact, did you see Jesus' reply? You see what he said? Look at verse 4. Verse 4, woman, why do you involve me? Jesus replied, my hour has not yet come. Okay, first of all, woman, who talks to their mom that way? I know he's 30 years old at this time, and you know, and it's not unusual, especially wasn't unusual in Jewish culture for men to speak. It wasn't disrespectful. This was actually a loving term. I just had my mom in for a visit last week. Some of y'all know that. And there were times, I'll tell you, where I felt like saying, woman? Like, you know, and I'm 52 years old, and she still would have smacked me upside my head. This was actually a normal, respectful term for Jewish sons to refer to their mothers. And I think that Jesus had a reason for this answer. You see, Jesus was already about his father's business. And his days of being tied to Mary as his mother, well, they were about over. You see, he would be about God's plan as the Son of God very, very soon. That's why he says, my hour has not yet come. That word present in the Greek, my hour has not yet come, literally means my present time has not yet arrived. You see, Jesus was aware of the people and the problem, but he was even more aware of God's present plan for his life, his divine timetable, his hour that was to come. So Jesus says, what's this have to do with you? What's this have to do with me? What's this have to do with us? Like he's saying, you know, to solve this problem, I would have to do like some God stuff here. Okay, I'd have to do a miracle. And it's not time for that yet. Not now. So with all due respect to the people that were there, solving this problem with a miracle now could be bad timing for the rest of his life as Messiah. The rest of his life, which we will see in the coming weeks of this series. So Mary, I love this, Mary just kind of leaves it to Jesus. He is present, he knows the people, he knows the problem, he knows if there's a, and she knows that if there's a plan, it's on him now. So look at verse 5. His mother says to the servants, do whatever he tells you. Do whatever he tells you to do. But I love this. It's like she's saying, you got this, all right? This is yours now. I'll live with his decision. I've made it known. I might not get my way. This might not turn out like I think it should, but I trust that Jesus will do the right thing. He always has. And I might get a no. This wedding may turn into an utter disaster, but But I've asked him, it's on him now. Or I may see a miracle today. It's in his hands now. And it turns out that Jesus is a generous king. A generous king. Look at verses 6 and 7. Jesus makes a way to help the people solve the problem, respect his mother, and stick to God's plan and to his hour. Verse 6, nearby there were 6 stone jars there, water jars, the kind that Jews use for ceremonial washing. What they would do is they would dip their hands in this water to make them clean, kind of like hand sanitizer, you know, when you go in a room, except for religious reasons. Okay, we're not going to get into all that, but each jar held 20 to 30 gallons of water. So verse 7, Jesus says to his servants, fill up the jars to the brim. There's no room for doubt here. No one is kind of slipping in fine wine into this undrinkable cleansing water. Catch the generosity. Notice this, the generosity of King Jesus. He fills them to the brim. 120 to 150 gallons worth. That's a lot of water. So if I did my math right, as the story turns out, Jesus turns this undrinkable water into what today would be up to 600 to 900 normal bottles of wine. That's generous. You see, that would be enough wine for the rest of the party, for the wedding, and a wedding gift for the lucky couple to use however they want. I'm guessing maybe open up a wine shop. A generous king. And I love this. It was Jesus, when the spotlight gets turned on to what's actually happened, Jesus generously lets the bridegroom get all the attention. He doesn't take any credit. He didn't stand up and say, let there be wine, and poof, there was wine there. He lets the bridegroom have it, which shows us that Jesus is not only a generous king, but he is also a humble, humble king. Verse 8 and 9, the humble king, he told the servants, now draw some out and take it to the master of the banquet. I love this, that Jesus uses these humble, unassuming servants. And if you think about it, it just always seems to be about servanthood with Jesus. Think about it. And these servants, how would you like to be one of those guys? How would you like to be there that day? Like, you know, they do this water here, and you know, and she said, you know, do whatever they do, and do whatever he says to do, and they go over to this water, and there's like, well, and he says, fill them up and serve it to the master of the banquet. And they're like, what? Like, this is water. This isn't going to work out. We can't bring this to the master of the banquet and serve it to him. He's going to have our hides. That's not going to work out. What is going on here? And Mary, I like, because Mary sure must have had some pull with those servants. I mean, you look at it here. It's like, man, she says, do whatever Jesus says to do. Which, by the way, there's probably a whole sermon here. Good leaders. There's leaders everywhere in here. Good leaders don't point to themselves. Good leaders point to Jesus and say, do whatever Jesus says to do. And miracles. And miracles happen. Miracles happen when God chooses that they happen. And we then humbly do what God says to do. Verse 9, the master of the banquet, he tastes the water. And the water had been turned into wine. And he didn't even realize where it had come from. But the servants who had drawn the water, they knew. So do you see the humility of the king? Do you see it? Jesus takes no glory for this event. No one knows what he did except the servants and his disciples. And you may wonder why. Why not? Why not take the glory, or even, why was this Jesus' first miracle? Why here in Cana in the middle of nowhere? Why do it at all? And why do it here? Why not start in Rome before the king, or feed thousands of people in public, or calm the storm, or do something just amazing like raising the dead where everybody could see it? The reason is because it wasn't about him, and it wasn't his time yet. I think that Jesus did this generous, humble little miracle without attention, maybe just maybe because he loves people. He loved people and he was present and he could. So when we consider the miracles that Jesus did or God may still do today, please notice that they only happen by God's power and with his wisdom. And they happen by being present with people. And they happen by his plan, not ours. And by being generous, not for asking for anything in return. And by being humble. I mean, no one's setting up a tent and lights and a show here. Miracles are not normal. They're not planned. They're not even expected. They're special. That's why we call them miracles. They're miracles. And God decides how and when and where and with whom they happen. And we see this miracle of the king and all the miracles of the king. We realize that he can do this because he is the king of creation. The king of creation. He has turned water to wine. Look back at verse 10 and 11. The master of the banquet says, everyone brings out the choice wine first and then the cheaper wine after the guests have had too much to drink. I don't know any better. But you have saved the best until last. This is not normal. All right? It's not normal. Something special has happened. All right, something special, 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 special indeed. And again, these servants, they blow me away. Now, can you imagine again being the servants at this time? Like, okay, we serve this water and what just happened? All right. I mean, we just, kind of like grabbed this, poured that, wine? Like, what just happened? And the master of the banquet is like, wow, like, now, like, this wine is coming out now. Like, this is usually served first at the beginning when you're trying to impress people. And this is the best wine of all. And where did it come from? Where did it come from? Don't miss the king of creation here. Don't miss what Jesus did. Y'all, how do you get wine? I know you go to the store. No, I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about where does wine come from? Grapes, and grapes, vines, and vines, seeds, and then more vines. And they're grown in dirt under sunlight with water and cared for until the grapes are picked and crushed and strained and aged. It takes time to make wine. And Jesus does this. He creates wine without any of that. Nothing, just like that. No grapes, no vines, no seeds, no dirt, no sun, no show, no tasting demonstration. He just does it. No one knew where it came from. No one knew where it came from because it didn't exist before that moment. The king of creation. It was like, what just happened all of a sudden? Y'all close your eyes for a minute. Close your eyes. Wow, all of a sudden we got coffee. Man, there's no power in me up here. Y'all saw that coming anyways. Actually could use a sip of that. Nope. Y'all saying, please, no more coffee. The king of creation. Man, don't miss what Jesus did. And again, the servants, man, they're probably like, whoa, where'd the water go? Like, we just filled this thing up with water, and now the water's gone, and now this wine's coming out. I mean, what happened? And no one put in an order for wine here. No one put in an order for miracle. I mean, I think Jesus just does what the God of creation would do here. He creates. He creates, and when he creates something, it is good. The best. So when we read the Bible and we see Jesus doing things like calming storms with his voice and healing the blind with his hands and bringing back the dead from the grave, it's because they are miracles. They're miracles, and they're miracles that show that Jesus is the king of creation. And being the king of creation means that he is the king of transformation. The king of creation can actually transform what he has made. And in this case, he transforms water into wine. And he didn't do it like I just did it. All right. And he didn't do it like, well, like the think about the priest, okay, driving down Highway 19 at 70 miles an hour. All right. Gets pulled over for speeding. Pulled over side of the road. Deputy goes to his window. Knock, knock, knock on the window. Hey, excuse me, sir. Do you know how fast you were going? Kinda. Yeah, you got me, officer. And officer's like, okay, yeah, you were speeding, but he smells wine on his breath. And he looks over, and there's like a near empty bottle on the passenger side of the car. He says, sir, have you been drinking? Priest says, only water, only water. The officer says, and what's that smell on your breath? And can you explain that bottle over there? The priest looks at the bottle and looks at the officer, looks up and looks at the bottle, looks up, and he goes, praise the good Lord, he has done it again. Some are like, he better tell that. Thanks for whoever gave me that, by the way. Not like that, not like this. Jesus actually, literally, transforms everyday water, water that no one would drink, into choice wine. He transforms it. He transforms what was empty into something full. He transformed this entire situation, this entire problem, into a joyful one. Some of us here today know that Jesus is the King of transformation. Some of y'all know this is true because your life was normal at best, and some much worse. Some of you here today know that your life was empty, empty of hope, empty of forgiveness, empty of joy. And all God had to work with was this empty container or these stone jars filled with undrinkable issues, baggage, sin. And maybe, just maybe somebody like Mary in your life said, there's a miracle there. And she brought you to Jesus, who was present. She started praying for you. She said, Jesus, do your thing. Or maybe in your life there was a servant, maybe like these servants, who listened and they did what Jesus said to do for you in your life. And you discovered that King Jesus was present and that he lived and he died and he rose again for you because he saw a miracle. He saw a miracle where others saw hopelessness. He saw fullness where there was emptiness. Jesus began a good work in you. And when you gave your life to him and were baptized, God created a new you. The old self was gone. God forgave you. He filled you up with his spirit, and he literally transformed your life. And now you know, and you can stand and say that Jesus Christ still does miracles today because you are the miracle. A miracle of the King. And Jesus did here in Cana. What he did here in Cana of Galilee was the first signs, the first of the signs, the first, yes, many more came after that. And in this room is filled with many, many more after that. These signs, his signs, you and I, through which he has revealed his glory. We reveal his glory today. And just like his disciples believed in him, we believe in him. See, the miracles of the King. The miracles of the King are so that you will believe in the King of miracles, King Jesus. And if you're tracking through this story, if you look at the miracles of Jesus all through the Bible, you see something that's happening in this story and in our lives and all the way into eternity. He is a present King and a generous and humble King, the King of creation and transformation, but Jesus is a King of celebration. He is the King of celebration. You see, this first miracle, it wasn't about the wine, it was about the sign pointing to the King. But it did happen at a wedding, and there was wine and a party, and there's a lot of symbolism here. We've even sang about that this morning. You see, Jesus made a memory here in Cana of Galilee. He was invited to a wedding, and to a wedding he went. He brought life to the party. The miracles of the king show us a king of joy, a king of life, a king of celebration. Y'all, some of us need to hear this today. You need to know this today. Being a disciple of Jesus, believing in him, is reason to celebrate. Following Jesus brings joy, it brings life, it brings celebration. And I could talk about this all day long. Man, because you know, I have my down days, you have your down days, but man, sometimes we just kind of walk through our whole life like we don't have anything to celebrate for. You know, we get down and we're on negativity, you know, like pessimist. Like, no, think about this. We have a wedding feast at hand, a wedding feast, and Jesus is the bridegroom and he is ready to celebrate with us. Yes, in heaven, the best is yet to come, but it begins now, right now, with the King of Celebration leading our lives in joy with Jesus. He leads us as a family. I hope you know that today, and we sing that today, and we enter here, and we worship together, and we leave this place following a king of celebration, a king who will bring forgiveness and grace and joy to people's lives. Man, this is the first thing that I ever noticed when I started hanging around with Christ followers. I didn't know Jesus, and even after I became a Christian, I was like, what, are you kidding me? Like, wow, I can be a Christian and have fun too? I had no idea that was even possible. See, I grew up thinking that being a Christian was all about rules and all about following things and all about, you know, just, you know, what I wasn't going to be able to do. And when I met those Christians, I saw real joy. And it wasn't in a bottle. And it wasn't in a party. It was in Jesus. Joy in Jesus. Music, food, generosity, real purpose, real peace, helping others, joy. You know, I heard a preacher say recently that there are many intelligent reasons to reject Christianity. I suppose that's true. But saying that Jesus is no fun is not one of them. This miracle shows us that. If one of your reasons are, I'll miss out on life, I need to sin some more before I decide to follow Jesus, or I look at all these do's and all these don'ts, and I can't possibly. If those are your reasons for not following Jesus, those are dumb reasons. I'm sorry. And I'm also sorry if someone made you believe that. Yes, following Jesus means sacrifice, and it means giving up old things and living your life for him instead of yourself. Yes, but that is so that we can have true life now and celebrate with him in the end. Yes, God has saved the best until last in heaven, but as many of us can say today, like the guests at that party that day, we celebrate, and we celebrate with the King of miracles, now, today, here, in the present, with a present king, with a generous king, a humble king, the king of creation, the king of celebration, by believing in him and having life, y'all, life, life in his name. Jesus performed many other signs in the presence of his disciples, which are not recorded in this book, but these are written so that you may believe in Jesus as the Messiah, the Son of God, King Jesus, and that you, by believing, may have life, life in his name. I hope y'all believe that today. You know, here at CCW, and all of us together, I mean, we know this, we have a vision, and you're part of that vision. We want everyone within our influence to believe in Jesus and have life in his name. Everyone. Maybe you're here today and you're thinking, I need that. Or maybe you know someone. You need to know. The miracles of the king are so that we will believe in the King of miracles. So don't miss this. And some of y'all still need to believe in Jesus as king. You still need to believe in Jesus, the Messiah, the Son of God, and have life in his name. And if this is you today, we're here to help you out. There'll be a prayer team up front, maybe somebody who invited you today, or maybe somebody you can talk to. We're here to help you understand that and give your life to him and be transformed by the King, because you are the miracle. And believers, Christ followers, Don't miss the miracles of the King around you this week. Slow down. Turn off your phones. Stop and be present in the lives of the people around you. Be present in their problems, especially if they live in the same house with you. The people that sit around the dinner table with you, your son, your daughter down the hallway. So easy to shut them out. No, be present with them. Be present in their problems. And as you do, listen, please listen. Listen to them and listen. Listen to Jesus and do what he says. Put yourself aside and follow his plan for your family, for your neighbors, for this community, just like those servants did. And today, if you need a miracle, you need a miracle today, you got a problem, you got something you don't know the answer to, go to the King. Go to the King of miracles. Pray. Begin to pray to him. Trust him with it. Leave it. He'll do what he's going to do. And accept whatever that is. Accept whatever he decides to do. Again, we'd be glad to pray with you this morning. There's some cards in your seats. You can fill those out. Prayer is powerful. If you need a miracle, bring it to the King. And finally, as we get ready to sing and we get ready to leave today, celebrate, please, celebrate with King Jesus. Wherever you are, let's go ahead and stand together, and we're going to sing this song called Messiah. I just want to encourage you to celebrate with the King, to shine wherever you go today, to your neighbor, to your friends, whether it's at work or school, to leave this place, to be the life of the party, to bring the joy of the King to everywhere you go, to bring hope and life and love. It starts right here. In fact, get to know someone different today. Instead of breaking off into your normal groups, get to know someone new today. Come back on Wednesday nights. Jump into what's going on around here. Join a small group during the week. Celebrate with the King. Serve somewhere special. Man, I promise, we have got miracles all around us just waiting to happen. And if you will do that, maybe, maybe, just maybe, you will see and be a part of a miracle of the King this week. Father God, we love you and we thank you. Thank you for dying for us, Jesus. Thank you for rising again from the dead so that we can live life in you. And I pray, God, I pray that we will just stop and look around us. God, I pray that you would use us like you used those servants that day. Use us like you used Mary. And most of all, Jesus, I pray that you will begin to do miracles in our lives and around our lives, whether it's physical, whether it's emotional, whether it's especially spiritual. God, I pray that we would be able to see those problems and see those needs and reach out with the love of Jesus, because you are a King of celebration, and we have a lot of celebration to do, God, right here, right now, in this place, and in our lives, as we sing to you, Jesus. Thank you. You are our Messiah and our King, and it's in your name we pray.